Welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. We've got an exciting show today. At the back end of the show, you're going to hear from Paul Street, activist, historian, and journalist, and a member of Refuse Fascism's editorial board. Now, he's going to be talking about the trial of Trump in the U.S. Senate and the importance of convict Trump. Before that, we'll hear an interview I did a few weeks ago with Jeff Kaufman and Marsha Ross, makers of the film Nazreen, an immersive portrait of one of the world's most courageous human rights activists and political prisoners, Nasreen Sotoudeh, and of Iran's remarkably resilient women's rights movement. Now, I'm playing this because it was part of an important live stream event from Revolution Books New York, which I'll tell you about. And opening the show up, we're going to spend some time talking about the New Year's statement from Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party and the most important political thinker in the world today. The statement is, a new year, the urgent need for a radically new world for the emancipation of all humanity. We'll open up with Andy Z, host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube and an advocate for Bob Avakian's new synthesis of communism, the New Communism. This is a commentary he made for the Revolution Nothing Less or RNL show. After that, we'll speak with Annie Day of the National Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour about the statement and an opportunity you will have to participate in a series of seminars to discuss the statement. So let's hear Andy Z.
We begin our second season with a New Year's statement from Bob Avakian titled, A New Year, the Urgent Need for a Radically New World for the Emancipation of All Humanity. Bob Avakian, BA's New Year's statement is a blast, not just a breath of fresh bracing air in a suffocating moment in history. Hundreds of millions, if not billions of people, are choking and gasping for air from COVID, from the destruction of the atmosphere, from fires and floods and poisoned water, and even more from the vile bile of ruling classes around the world who demonize and torment the masses of humanity worldwide with their rule and their boastful, endless insistence that this is the best and really the only way the world could be. BA's statement is a salvo for a new year against all of this, inviting and fighting for you, for millions of people, to see how and why a radically new world is possible. Precisely because the hour is late for the survival of the earth and life on it, because fascism and the reactionary regimes are rearing their heads everywhere with all the brutality, death, destruction, oppression, and repression that this system weighs so heavy on people's lives and spirits, you should take the time and take in the whole of BA's statement, A New Year, the Urgent Need for a Radically New World and the Emancipation of All Humanity. Bob Avakian pulls the lens back and he doesn't pull punches. BA says that even as it is a very good thing that the fascism of the Trump-Pence regime was defeated in the election, the opposition between the fascist Republican Party and the Democrats will not only continue, but he says in this statement, it, quote, does not represent the fundamental divisions in society and the world, nor the fundamental interests of the masses of people in this country and in the world as a whole. Nor can the profound problems confronting humanity be solved. In fact, they can only get worse within the confines of this murderously oppressive and exploitive system and the chaos and destruction it will continue to unleash on a massive scale so long as it continues to dominate the world. But that is not all. BA goes on to warn and to awaken us to the reality that, quote, the electoral defeat of the Trump-Pence regime only, quote, buys some time, end quote, both in relation to the imminent danger posed by the fascism this regime represents, and more fundamentally, in terms of the potentially existential crisis humanity is increasingly facing as a consequence of being bound to the dynamics of this system of capitalism imperialism, end quote. What is this system of capitalism imperialism? These words are being bandied about today, even by politicians. But what is capitalism? What is imperialism? Why do we need to know what they are and how they work? Do they describe a system that is broken, or is this a system working the only way it can, causing horrific suffering of literally billions of people? Is capitalism the only way society can be organized? Is humanity capable of rising above the dog-eat-dog world we live in? What does an economic system have to do with the systemic oppression of black people of color, of women, of LGBTQ people, of people in countries around the world? And what is the way to understand this? What is the way out of the madness that we say Babavakian has developed? Does humanity have to stay ignorant of the way the world works? Subject to the rantings of demagogues and to the empty promises of so-called reformers who claim they can fix what is beyond repair? Over the coming weeks and months, we will be digging into this and breaking it down on the RNL show. And we will be providing you, the audience, with an online series of discussions, Zoom into the revolution, we're calling them, of different kinds. Some for just learning about and getting introduced to the statement, getting introduced to BA and to the work he has done, and others that will be a four-week participatory seminar to engage this statement with others. And a young member of the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour is going to be speaking about this later in this very program. A moment ago, I quoted Babavakian saying in this statement, quote, "The electoral defeat of the Trump-Pence regime only buys some time, both in relation to the imminent danger posed by the fascism this regime represents, and more fundamentally, in terms of the potentially existential crisis humanity is increasingly facing as a consequence of being bound to the dynamics of this system of capitalism imperialism." More questions leap to mind. What underlying changes in the world and in the U.S. have given rise to the Trump-Pence regime's fascism? What really drives this virulent fascist movement that denies the very concept of truth? What economic, political, and social changes gave rise to and fuels the Christian fascist movement in this country and religious fundamentalist fascism around the world? BA quotes the Miami Herald columnist Leonard Pitts, who wrote that there really are two countries now sharing one border. Really, will honeyed words calling for unity overcome the great divides in this country? And how deep are those divides? And why? BA says we've only bought some time with the election of Biden. That's a serious forecast. That's not something to gloss over, but something we need to understand. The import and the implication is tremendous. In his statement, BA goes into what's behind it with substance and with science. He brings evidence. He brings analysis to the evidence, and most of all, he brings us to the method and approach by which he arrived at these conclusions, so that all of us, whether we are experienced at working with theory or we've never been exposed or grappled with it before, so that all of us can understand and take up a scientific way to know and then to, on that basis, to change the world. BA says, quote, "To understand why we are confronted with the situation we are, it is necessary to not merely respond to and in effect be whipped around by what is happening on the surface at any given time, but to dig beneath the surface, to discover the underlying mainsprings and causes of things and arrive at an understanding of the fundamental problem and the actual solution," end quote. We should not be scared of or dismissive of science. What we should be scared of is not knowing how society and the world we live and suffer under actually works. We should be concerned about how and why bullshit is everywhere, and it is most sharply revealed in the millions of people believing that some mysterious secret forces are conspiring against white Christian people and that Trump won the election by a landslide as their God ordained he would. And we should be concerned, too, by the poisonous notion that comes from people who are coming from a far better place that opposes injustice. But it is a way of thinking about the different kinds of oppression, a thinking that runs through the progressive movements that only what you experience yourself is true, or at least for you. That someone like you or someone who is oppressed in one way or another organically possesses an understanding of the cause and the solution to oppression, including their own. Understanding the world in this kind of way leaves you blind to the real causes and the solution to the monumental problems that humanity faces. This is completely different and opposed to a scientific method and approach to understanding, as BA says, quote, the underlying mainsprings and causes of things to arrive at an understanding of the fundamental problem and the actual solution, end quote. In his New Year's statement, B.A. brings alive the dynamics of how the world has changed in relation to the oppression of Black people, to the position and the heightening oppression of women here and internationally, to the changes to where and how our food is grown and distributed, and what all of this has to do with the rise of political forms of religious fundamentalism that are fueling theocratic fascist movements around the world and leading to the death of the planet we live on. These driving forces are not going to be cured by small changes to the system we live under, any more than a deadly cancer will be cured only by eating right, much less a Band-Aid. Most of all, B.A. brings in this statement and in his work overall a way out of the madness we face. He doesn't just call for a radically new world for the emancipation of all humanity. He opens the door to this new world and how we can get there through a great liberating struggle, building a movement today that is preparing for the time when we could actually make a revolution for that radically new world. What guides this and the new society that is concentrated in the Constitution for a new socialist republic in North America that B.A. has authored is the new communism. The new communism opens up the road to human emancipation, to real emancipation, on the foundation of a more scientific method and approach to society and to revolution. The new communism, quote, from Bob Avakian, quote, firmly rejects any approaches that amount to applying and justifying the bankrupt and extremely harmful notion that the ends justify the means, and that truth is just an instrument of desired objectives, rather than what it actually is, a correct reflection of objective reality. B.A. has said, quote, this is not a revolution for revenge. The goal is not for exploited and oppressed humanity to have a chance to become exploiters and oppressors themselves. It is a communist revolution whose goal is nothing less than putting an end to all relations of exploitation and oppression and all the degradation and destruction that is bound up with this throughout the world. B.A.'s New Year's statement is an invitation and a call to struggle, not only against the powers that be, but with each other, over what is the problem and what is the solution. A struggle that necessarily involves how people think. It is a fight for an objective scientific method and approach, which means not how I wish things to be, but how things actually are. And on that basis, how they really could be changed to bring about a world where all people all over the world could flourish. Yes, the Trump-Pence regime is gone from the pinnacle of presidential power, and a sigh of relief is understandably felt by all of us. But relief is not the same as hope and struggle on a scientific basis for a future where all of humanity could thrive and flourish and live in sustainable harmony with the earth. A sigh of relief that leads to a retreat into an oblivious individualism of my life, my family, my problems, my people, a return to a world that will only result in the relentless workings of the capitalist system, accelerating the growth of fascism and the ravaging of people and the environment. Yes, the Trump-Pence regime is gone from the pinnacle of presidential power. A sigh of relief is understandably felt by all of us. But relief is not the same as hope and struggle on a scientific basis for a future where all of humanity could thrive and live in sustainable harmony with the earth. A sigh of relief that leads to a retreat into an oblivious individualism of my life, my family, my problems, my people. Such an approach will lead to a return to a world that will only result in the relentless workings of the capitalist system, accelerating the growth of the very fascism you're relieved to be free of, and the ravaging of the people and the environment. There is no shelter from the storm for 7 billion people on the planet. There is no hoping that the dark forces of white supremacy, patriarchy, and the vicious xenophobia that fuels the theocratic, conspiracy-addled forces of Trump fascism will go quietly into the night. They will not. There is not only the future of Trumpism replaced by the killing confines of the Democratic Party politics as usual, with their promises and brocades of lofty words that cover up and excuse the continuation of the grinding oppression of this system. There is a third and a far better future, and there is a road forward, a hard but liberating road to that future. There is the extraordinary leadership for that struggle in Bob Avakian. There is a force that is beginning to gather to make that real, a movement that needs you and is inviting you to get into BA's statement for the new year. A radically new world for the emancipation of all humanity. This is not just a dream. It is a dream that really could be. And with that, once again, welcome to Revolution Nothing Less.
That was Andy Z, host of the Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube and an advocate for Bob Avakian's new synthesis of communism, The New Communism. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. That was Dr. John and Revolution. All right, joining us now is Annie Day, and she's going to talk with us for a few minutes about the statement and the opportunity you will have to participate in a series of seminars to discuss this statement. This conversation took place before the first seminar, which I have to say was really great, and I will tell you at the end how to get connected with future discussions yourself. Annie is a member of the National Get Organized for an Actual Revolution Tour, and she's joining us today to talk about all this. Annie, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Michael. How are you?
I'm good.
And I'm very glad to be here.
I'm here. I'm glad you're here, too. There you go. Okay. Enough. Let's go. So let's talk about this. You had mentioned to me earlier that you were very interested in stepping up and talking about what we were just talking about earlier, and with Andy Z, listening to his comments on what was going on in society and what needs to be done. And I wanted you to actually sort of build off of that.
Yeah. So, you know, you just heard a really powerful presentation from Andy Z about this New Year statement by Bob Avakian. A new year, the urgent need for a radically new world for the emancipation of all humanity. And the questions that Andy just walked through that this statement speaks to really demand people seriously get into them. You know, what is happening in the world right now? How did we get here? How are we going to get out of this? Is it possible to get out of this? What's that going to require? So the National Revolution Tour is organizing a whole series of seminars. And this Saturday at 1 p.m., there is going to be an introductory seminar. And if there is a bone, just to your listeners, if there is a bone in your body that cannot stand the idea of quote unquote going back to normal, if you recognize that one, that's not happening, and two, normal was a horror anyway, then join us to get more deeply into the substance of this New Year's statement.
Mm-hmm. And what do they got to do that?
Okay, so what you got to do is you have to email us. So go get your pen, write this down, email us, and it's a long email address. It's getorganizedforrevolutiontour@gmail.com. Again, that's getorganizedforrevolutiontour@gmail.com. And if you email us and let us know you're interested in joining this introductory seminar this Saturday, we will send you the link to register. And if you didn't get all that down, you could just go to revcom.us, revcom.us, and you'll see on the website a link to that email address. And so that's how people sign up for the introductory seminar. And then this is going to be the beginning of a process where we're inviting people to go more deeply into it. And this seminar is going to be a presentation. People have a chance to ask questions in the chat. And then this is going to kick off where we're going to do a whole series of four-part seminars to go pretty deeply into this and to do so in a collective participatory format.
Mm-hmm. Sounds great. And wish I could be there. It'll be
You better be there, Michael.
I was going to say, wait a minute. I'm going to be there. I wouldn't miss it for anything. All right.
I want to add, if I can, sure. One thing that, because it's a pretty atomized society and it's a hard time. And people we're all quarantining separate, but it's also a society that pulls away from collectivity, that pulls away from people working together. And one of the hallmarks of the new communism is a recognition that science and the struggle to know and change the world is a collective endeavor. And there's a set of comments from somebody who was on the national tour, a young woman who talked about what difference it's made to be part of these collective seminar discussions. And I just want to make one point from it where she says, so I'm going to quote from her. She says, "It's through a process of being excited to try and take on these difficult subjects about what's happening and why it's actually happening, through a spirit of curiosity and inquiry, and for a reason, for the emancipation of humanity, where you can be excited if you're struggled with when you're wrong." She says, "This process is about coming to know and understand the world scientifically. And it's something that can't just happen in some vacuum sealed experience. We have to be working with reality as it changes, and we have to be doing so collectively." And then, she talked about being a part of a collective process that involved people from different backgrounds, from different levels of educational experience. And if you're new to revolutionary theory, don't be intimidated. And if you aren't new to revolutionary theory, then get more deeply into this New Year statement and join these seminars. And all of us with our different strengths and weaknesses and different levels of experience can struggle together to be part of this process of understanding the world as it actually is and changing it radically. So that's what these seminars about. And you can zoom into the revolution. That's what we're calling these seminars. So come zoom into the revolution. And the email again is getorganizedforrevolutiontour@gmail.com, or you can go to revcom.us.
All right, Annie Day, I'm really glad that we got together, and I'm really looking forward to joining you. All right.
Thanks, Michael. Sure. Look forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. Take care now.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That was Annie Day, the National Get Organized for an Actual Revolution Tour. The time for future sessions of Zoom into the Revolution has not been announced, but if you go to revcom.us and scroll down a little, you'll see a paragraph on the seminar with the email address that Annie just mentioned. I'll also report it on my Facebook page. Now, before we hear the interview with Jeff Kaufman and Marcia Ross, I'd like to play the song "How Can I Tell You" by Angelique Kujo. And this is from the film Nasreen and was nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Song.
Tell you my truth, little one. How can I tell you the things I have done? Though I cannot see the sky, you know, I only think of you, and you shine for me more brightly than the sun. And how can I tell you the tears I have shed? Are you still lonely each night in your bed? I could tell you to forget me, but the words would not be true. And I love you always, even if you do. This is my story. We've loved Nazarene.
That was How Can I Tell You by Angelique Kidjo. We're going to replay an interview I did a few weeks back with Jeff Kaufman and Marsha Ross, makers of the film Nasreen, an immersive portrait of one of the world's most courageous human rights activists and political activists, Nasreen Sotoudeh, and of Iran's remarkably resilient women's rights movement. I'm replaying this interview because they were part of an important online panel at Revolution Books New York. Free Nasreen and all of Iran's political prisoners, heroism for these times. It featured Jeff Kaufman and Marsha Ross, as well as Karine Deutsch Karlikar, the director of PEN America's Free Expression at Risk programs, and Raymond Latta, staff member of Revolution Books in Harlem, a political economist and writer for RevCom.us, and an advocate for the new communism developed by Bob Avakian. To see a video of the panel, go to Revolution Books NYC, so that's revolutionbooksnyc.org, revolutionbooksnyc.org. And click on the tab for events and videos. Now let's hear from Marsha Ross and Jeff Kaufman.
Basically, I want people to know about the film that you have made. And I saw it, and I was blown away when I saw it. I've seen it twice now. It just took me into a whole other place in terms of understanding what's going on, both the horrors and the actual, you know, the ability of people to stand up against the most horrible things being thrown at them. So let's talk about your film. It's Nasreen. Give people a sense of what it is and what it's about.
Well, it's a documentary about Nasreen Sotoudeh, who's probably the world's most acclaimed human rights activist and political prisoner. She's an Iranian lawyer who's been fighting for years for, you know, religious minorities, people on the death penalty, juveniles, women's rights, an extraordinary woman who time and time again puts herself at risk for others and really sets a bar for, you know, who we are here. The whole film is a reminder of how easy it is for democracy to slip away and how precious it is to hold on to and how people will put themselves at risk for democracy. It was an extraordinary experience because it was almost like filming with Nelson Mandela before he was sent off to Robben Island. Halfway through filming with Nasreen, you know, on the streets, in theaters, at home, in protests, she was arrested and sent to prison. We finished the film after she was arrested, but have continued to work closely with her and her family. And it's been an extraordinary journey, not just as a film, but now as a campaign for her, but also, as she would always say, she'd be the first to say, for political activists around the world.
So, Marsha, what do you think about this? How do you look at actually what's happening there? Because actually, one of the things, when I saw the film, you got a sense of the very heroic and, you know, basically strong person that was there, you know, and with Nasreen, it was actually, she was just not, they weren't going to cow her. And she just pushed her way through. And she is, you know, you should tell people where she's at now, what's going on, how it's happening. I want people to understand that these are two people that actually helped to set fire in a good way in parts of the world that have been stomped on and have continued to be stomped on and where people suffer dramatically, and in particular women. And this was a big part of what was going on in this. So can you talk to people about that?
Well, first of all, the reason that she was arrested this time, this was actually the second time, but the first, this particular time while we were making the film, was because she was defending the women that were taking their hashibs off in public, you know, protesting against the mandatory headscarf law. You know, that, and this is a way that they control women in Iran and other parts of the world. And you know, you bring up something really important, because something we really wanted to address with the film is, you know, this woman is a mother. You know, she's a very compassionate human being, brilliant, tremendous strategic lawyer. You know, her feeling about what she's doing is that she's doing it for her children and the children to come and other people's children. You know, she feels like we cannot be silent, because if we're silent, you know, what's going to happen? And she's taken it upon herself, as have many other people that are in prisons in Iran. And what's fantastic about Nasreen also is that she also stands for all the other people that are in prison, too. It's not about her. It's about what's happening there for others as well. And many, many voices are, you know, oppressed there for speaking up against the government. The government is afraid of this kind of dissension, and they try and silence people, and she just refuses to be silent. And I want to say one other thing, because you touched upon it as I was sort of listening to your previous, you know, your previous interview. You know, one of the things is we were making the film, and Jeff will talk about this, you know, after the election in 2016, and, you know, the first thing that came up for me the morning after was, oh, my God, what's going to happen to our civil rights in this country? I mean, I was sick to my stomach, and it's something I feared all these last years. And making this film, you know, we were watching it happen. I mean, you can see what happens in a country where people's voices are squashed when their civil rights are taken away. You know, there's no end to what governments will try to do to people to have power.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is the situation with, I don't know which one of you would want to speak to this, but what is the situation with Nasreen right now? And I know that there's, actually, I read there was a lot of women actually going through their daily life who are actually, you know, basically sort of putting themselves in the same position, putting themselves in the same kind of, you know, standing up for Nasreen. I wanted to actually see how that actually is happening now in terms of, there's something more going on than this woman who actually is, and I'm saying actually too much because it's just really, you know, it can't be too much because this person is now, I mean, people. I don't think, do people know what's actually happened to her? I know that she's been tortured, she's been, all these other things have gone on, and there's women who are going around in the streets modeling themselves after her to actually uphold what she's doing. But there's this real effort and a really important thing for people to be doing in terms of stepping out and letting it be known that they will not stand back and tolerate this inhuman torture.
Michael, first of all, it means so much to Marcia and me that you love the film, and you know that says a lot. So I should just note that folks can see the film by going to our website, which is nasreenfilm.com, you know, www.nasreenfilm.com, and there's a quick link so you can see a film at a local Lemley Theater. It's you watch it on your own, or Kino Marquee. You watch it on your own computer, but it's through a local theater to support your local theater. And also, we just released this music video that you played a bit of, the sung by Angelique Kidjo, the amazing Angelique Kidjo, and written by Lynn Ahrens and Stephen Flaherty, and that's on YouTube now. And so, the name of the song is "How Can I Tell You," and I hope that people have a chance to listen to it. That pays tribute, by the way, that music video, to other activists around the world, because Nasreen always wanted this film to be not just about herself, but about others. And you asked about how she's doing now. She'd been very, very ill. She had been in Indian prison. She had a heart condition. She had been on a hunger strike. And then one day the leaders of the authorities said to her, hey, we're going to take you to a hospital. And they put her in a car, and instead of taking her to a hospital, they drove her to a worse prison. And in that other prison, she got COVID. She was home briefly on a health care leave with COVID and the heart condition, but then abruptly they sent her back. Just this morning, she was released on a brief home visit for some medical care, but we anticipate that she'll be back in prison after that. And, you know, it's heartbreaking, you know, when you know her, when you know her children, you know how much she loves her family, and when you know what they're doing to her to see this happening. But it shows, as Marcia was saying, you know, her incredible strength and resilience, and this amazing woman in Iran, who is really a model for all of us. We had a chance to work with John Lewis on a couple of occasions, and the only other person I've ever met who has that sort of glow, you know, as a person and as an activist. You know, the two don't necessarily go together, but to have that quality one-on-one and publicly is Nasreen Soh today.
All right, Jeff, we're going to have to wrap this up really quick. I'm sorry we're running out of time here, but I want to once again tell people what the film is, where they, how they can see it, and why they should see it.
Well, thank you. First of all, we have a website, nasreenfilm.com, and on there are links to get tickets. So you just go there and say watch film, and it will take you to places where you can see the movie in movie theaters, and also later this month it'll be out on VOD, so it'll be there on Amazon and iTunes and a lot of other things. And I think it's important. She's not as well known as in this country as she should be, and I think she's really a role model, you know, for anybody that cares about, you know, human rights and women's rights and political activism and for getting engaged, you know, in making a difference in your society.
And if I could just quickly add that one of the things we wanted to show is, you know, there's this evil, there's this horrible demonization of Iran and demonization of Islam, and we want to show that that's not the real Iran. That's a story that's put out for false political purposes. And so one of the things the film does is it shows you a side of Iran that you've never seen before. And one of the things Marsh and I talked about with Nesrin many times was that the leaders of a country are not necessarily the people of the country. And so we hope that it'll take you to a place that you haven't seen before, even though you've seen the name.
Yeah, I mean, we have found that many people, you know, have never, most people know nothing about Iran except what they read in the newspaper here. And Iran is a very beautiful country with a vibrant culture, you know, with people that are rebelling against society. They are protesting. And, you know, it's important that people see that.
Mm-hmm. All right, folks, I'm getting the signal that we got to wrap up. But I want to thank you both very much for the film, for being on the show this time, and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Okay, thank you.
All right, that was Marsha Ross and Jeff Kaufman, filmmakers of Nasreen. To see a video of the panel, go to Revolution Books NYC. So that's revolutionbooksnyc.org, revolutionbooksnyc.org, and click on the tab for events and videos. For more about the film and to view it on theater websites, go to nasreenfilm.com. That's NASRINFILM.com. I would also like to remind you of the Zoom Into the Revolution seminars that Annie talked about. These are seminars to get into the New Year's statement by Bob Avakian, a new year, the urgent need for a radically new world for the emancipation of humanity, and to discuss the statement with other like-minded people from other perspectives. This is a Zoom seminar and you have to pre-register. You can find all the information at revcom.us and I'll post the directions on my Facebook page as well. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. That was Function Underground. Now let's hear Paul Street from the Refuse Fascism Forum, the Senate impeachment trial, and the need to refuse fascism. He's introduced by Sam Goldman.
I want to bring my friend Paul Street on. Paul is a fellow member of the Refuse Fascism editorial board, and he is a historian and journalist, and he is the author of a book, The Hollow Resistance, Obama, Trump, and the Politics of Impeachment. Happy to welcome Paul.
You know, as the Capitol riot that he instigated unfolded, Trump was initially pleased by the events. As he watched them on television, he, according to the New York Times, disregarded aides pleading with him to intercede. White House staff reported that Trump was, quote, delighted while, quote, walking around the White House, confused about why other people on his team weren't as excited as he was. Trump rebuffed requests to mobilize the DC National Guard. The Guard was mustered belatedly to defend Congress only after an order from acting Defense Secretary Chris Miller. Mike Pence approved the command, not Trump. Republican House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy demanded that Trump make a statement denouncing the rioters. Trump refused, leading to a screaming match between the two men. At 4:17 p.m. on the 6th, Trump told the rioters, "We love you, you're very special." At 6:01, he tweeted, quote, "These are the events that happen when a sacred landslide election victory is viciously stripped from great patriots who have been unfairly treated for so long. Remember this day forever," Trump said. Make no mistake, Trump wanted the events to spiral out of control to the point where he could declare a state of emergency and introduce martial law. That was the seditious intent. However delusional, consistent with the counsel of his disgraced former national security advisor, the fascist felon Michael Flynn. Right now, as we speak, Americana fascists feel energized by January 6th. Yesterday's New York Times reported that Flynn, quote, is positioning himself as a voice of a far right that in the wake of the Capitol riot appears newly and violently emboldened. Now, if Trump can't be convicted in an impeachment trial and then barred from holding future office by the US Senate, after all of this, then there's really no point in having the impeachment clause. If Trump can get away with fueling and then setting a match to a murderous neo-fascist white nationalist physical assault on the nation's legislative branch and the certification of a presidential election, well, then that just signals a great big shining green light to future fascistic attacks on bourgeois democracy, likely to be carried out by shrewder and more disciplined and competent fascists than the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, the tangerine-tinted, tiny-fingered, Twitter-tantruming Trump. Non-conviction tells fascists that anything goes. It says that a tyrant sitting in the world's most powerful office is free to wreak havoc after he loses his bid for re-election. Non-conviction will be an act of civil war. All the arguments against the conviction of Trump and the banning of Trump from holding future office are idiotic. The contention that Trump shouldn't be convicted because he was exercising his right to free speech on January 6th is mistaken and misleading on multiple levels. The claim that it is unconstitutional to convict a president after he's left office is completely false and rejected by the preponderant majority of constitutional scholars. The notion that the trial means Congress can't move forward on COVID relief and other measures. I've heard this from people on the left. The notion that if we do this, then we won't have time and energy to do other things that the government needs to do. That's a false argument. It's a moronic argument, if you ask me. The idea that the attack was a populist, proletarian uprising, which is actually something you hear online from people who identify as left, is just pathetic and doesn't fit any of the basic facts of the case. So is the idea that January 6th wasn't really all that big a deal. I can't tell people here how many times folks, some of them who identify on the left, have told me that. Really, what are you talking about? It's just a bunch of crazy, wacky dudes that somehow got in there and just stomped around a little bit, and then they didn't know what to do. Some unnamed supposed anarchist recently told a Chicago Refuse Fascism activist that Trump shouldn't be convicted because a guilty verdict would send the message that other capitalist politicians aren't criminals too. So it's like, oh, okay, let's let some murderers go unpunished since other murderers get away with murder. I've heard it said that Trump shouldn't be convicted because he and other presidents have committed bigger crimes than January 6th, like the invasion of Cambodia, the invasion of Iraq, the stealing of children from their parents' arms at the border, or fueling and fanning a pandemic that may well kill a million or more Americans before it's done. To which I say, oh, okay. So people get to go free on one crime if they and others haven't been charged with other and perhaps bigger crimes that they committed, really? I mean, there's a lot more I could say about the arguments being made against Trump being convicted and fanned from future office. All of it is just rubbish. But here's the thing. These bad arguments appear very likely to prevail. Trump is almost guaranteed to be exonerated for a second time by the Senate under the Holy Charter passed by and for 18th century slave owners and merchant capitalists for whom democracy was the ultimate nightmare. It takes a two-thirds vote in the upper body of Congress to convict. That's not going to happen in a Senate that drastically overrepresents the nation's most reactionary, rural, and white regions. Every state in the U.S. has two U.S. senators, regardless of population size, which ranges from nearly 40 million in liberal California to just over 500,000 in right-wing Wyoming. The deeply corrupt Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who initially called Trump's January 6th actions impeachable, now he claims to see it as unconstitutional to convict a president after he's left office. Knowing, I think, that the game is rigged by the nature of the deeply conservative constitutional setup, I noticed that yesterday, Sunday, New York Times didn't carry a single solitary story or editorial on this week's trial. Some, perhaps most, of the liberal elite is now, I think, in let's look forward, not backwards mode, the same mindset behind the non-prosecution of Bush and Cheney for torture and for the invasion and murder of Iraq. Proof positive that Trump and his most fervent backers were in fact fascists, if sloppy ones. The attack on the Capitol is in danger of being swept into the dustbin of history and thrown down Orwell's memory hole in absolutely dangerous kinds of ways. It didn't happen here, really. This is the hollow resistance that the bipartisan, fascism-appeasing American establishment has long exhibited in response to the growth of the ever more mainstreamed American far right. This is even somewhat the mindset of Move On and Indivisible and the other so-called democracy defenders, the liberal and progressive astroturf groups that decided not to take to the streets to make a visible mass popular response to the fascist authoritarians who are being allowed to terrorize the nation, the Obamas and the Clintons and the Bidenites and the Indivisibles just don't get it. Fascism must be properly and openly identified, refused, fought, and defeated. The same goes for the racist, sexist, ecocidal, capitalist, imperialist system that gives birth to the far right again and again in history. Only mass popular resistance determined to carry out an actual people's anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, anti-racist, anti-sexist revolution can defeat this fascist movement and the eco-exterminist class rule social order that gave rise to it. Thank you.
That was Paul Street, activist, historian, and journalist, and a member of Refuse Fascism's editorial board. We'll be bringing you a lot more on Trump's trials next week. We've got some time left, so I'd really like to play a piece from Bob Avakian, BA himself. This is What If? And it's from a dialogue with Cornel West, Revolution and Religion, the Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion.
And many people say, we need religion to be able to endure, to survive, to keep from going crazy, to continue to struggle on, even to have some moments of joy and glimmers of hope in a world full of so much cruelty and brutality, heartbreak and heartlessness. But what if the world doesn't have to be this way? What if we could live in a world where never again would a parent have to fear for the life of their child just because of the color of their skin? What if we lived in a world where never again would that soul-wrenching experience that never leaves of having to bury your own child whose life was stolen by a brutal thug with a gun and the backing of the powers that be. What if being black no longer meant living in a white supremacist society that continually assaults you in your very being and very sense of worth, constantly subjects you to terror, openly or in more subtle ways, and forces you to face the constant danger that you or your children will have your life snuffed out at any moment for doing nothing but being? What if your humanity really mattered and were considered precious? What if this were true of all people of color and of immigrants? What, in fact, if all people were just people of different colors? And there were no distinctions and discrimination and persecution and brutality based on what nationality or race you were? What if there were no such thing as immigrants? What if we all lived in a world community of human beings without borders and tanks and guns and planes to enforce them? What if women could walk down the street and look every man they encounter straight in the eye and fear nothing and not be made to feel? And not be made to feel that you're on display and to be evaluated by how you sexually titillate them. What if no more women were ever again battered, raped, assaulted, denied the right to control their own bodies? What if people who were different in their sexual orientation or just in the way they went through life, instead of being discriminated against and bullied, were valued for their difference? If that were seen as part of the great diversity of humanity? What if there were no more one part of society exploiting the others, and those exploited had no choice but to enrich them in order to be able to live themselves, working their whole life away under conditions of this ruthless exploitation? What if we didn't have to live in a lopsided world where a small number of countries have accumulated tremendous wealth by exploiting the great majority, and the conditions of the great majority are desperate? Look at the world. Look at the phenomenon of Ebola. There's been a lot of concern about Ebola, rightly so, but way too much hysterical fear about whether a few people here might get Ebola, and not nearly enough concern about what is happening to the people in Africa. What if there were no more wars for domination and plunder? What if there were whole different relations among people, valuing each other's humanity? What if there were different relations to the environment, protecting it and providing for future generations instead of despoiling and ruining it? What if we could have a whole different outlook on life and on the future instead of one of dread and one of desperately striving just to make it? Now, to paraphrase John Lennon's song, Imagine, you may say I'm a dreamer, but this is not just a dream. It is something for which there is a definite basis in reality, and it is up to us, together with people throughout the world, to make it a reality.
All All right, that was a piece from Bob Avakian, BA himself, and it was What If? And it's from a dialogue with Cornel West, Revolution and Religion, The Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. And that brings us to the end of yet another show. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to share your thoughts and ideas about the show, or if you want to volunteer to be part of the show, write to me at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com.
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom for trying to change the system from within. I'm coming now, I'm coming to reward them. First, we take measures.